On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, a podcast brought to you by our good friends at Insurance Journal. And today I have the distinct pleasure of talking with Shiraz Saeed with Star Companies. He's the national practice leader for cyber risk. Welcome to the show, Shiraz. Very much thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Peter. I appreciate it as well.
Yeah, I think the cyber, the general topic of cyber is certainly top of mind for many folks in the insurance industry. A policy series that independent agents and brokers are being urged to talk about with clients. There's a whole risk management front. I mean, this is a big area, huge area. But in chatting with you in recent months, it was obvious that I was, and I'm not an underwriter, actuary, or anything, but I had just not seen the topic, the physical damage component that that you are very studied and like to talk about. So maybe why don't we start out first though with just generally what cyber, when you think of cyber, what you see.
Sure. So that's a great question, and it's a question that I pose to people all the time. When you think of cyber risk or the word cyber, what does it mean to you? And in reality, what it means is two things that can be mutually exclusive or totally intertwined, and that is a network security failure, or in lay terms, a hacking incident, the failure of your organization to protect their computer system, or a privacy incident, which is the failure of an organization to protect confidential or private information. When these two things happen together, that's what we commonly see as a data breach. Somebody hacks in, information is stolen or compromised. But there can be many instances where private information is compromised and it's in a paper format or a non-electronic means and it never touches the computer, and that can be totally independent. The other avenue is a network security failure by itself, right? So if you're an online retailer and you get a denial of service attack and you can't sell goods online, well, you're going to lose money in sales and those types of things, but nobody's private information is compromised. So when we have cyber risk, we have the hacking part, we have the private information part, we can have both. And the traditional cyber policies that you've seen out there have been around now for almost 10 years. And those were primarily designed in the beginning to address the privacy risk. There were always elements of network security, but it really was driven off of the privacy exposure, which most carriers in the cybersecurity space have gotten their arms around that risk, because there's certain finite things that we're going to have to pay for, like notification costs and identity monitoring and those types of things that relating to privacy. However, there's a whole slew of network security relating exposures that you face as well. And all of these cyber policies that you have out there exclude physical damage, whether it results from a privacy incident or a security incident. And that exclusion is typically seen through a bodily injury or property damage exclusion, which usually have absolute language, alleging, arising to, out of, or attributable to. So when we talk about physical damage, we want to try to address bodily injury and property damage that arises out of cyber.
You just teed up our whole podcast, Shiraz. Thanks for doing that. I think so. That's what I was alluding to earlier. You mentioned the finite components of it, you know, like the ability. And by the way, with privacy, I don't think, especially the younger consumers, I don't know if they really, I don't want to say they don't care about it, but their information's all over the place. Social security numbers and everything. I mean, you can, you know, repair someone's stolen identity. But when you're talking about some serious bodily injury or property damage as a result of a breach, you're talking about some serious stuff, right? You're talking about like an elevator crashing down 50 floors and because there was a hack of the elevator, things like that. I mean, this is serious stuff. Is this, you said it wasn't, it's excluded, but is it being addressed by the industry?
Well, that's a great question. So, Peter, I think you've heard me tell this story before, so I like that you brought it
up.
But yes, an elevator is an excellent example of how we can describe this scenario, and we can talk about two or three other examples as well. So let's talk about the elevator example from an insurance perspective, right? So if I'm an agent or a broker and I write a commercial real estate company that runs a building and that's, you know, 30 stories, and it's a new smart, green, efficient building, and those smart buildings have smart elevators that are computerized and are operated through a network, all right? And anything that's out there that's operated through a network is subject to compromise, all right? And let's give this scenario. Somebody's riding in the elevator. There are two people riding in the elevator. It's hacked into, all right? The brake is released on the elevator. It collapses. Two people unfortunately pass away, and we have $5 million worth of property damage to the elevator shaft of the lobby. You know, can't get into the building for weeks. This is a pretty bad scenario for any insurance agent or broker who's now going to have to manage this incident or claim on behalf of their client. And let's just say in this hypothetical scenario, we're in the lucky position that one agent or broker controls all the lines of coverage.
That always happens, right?
Yeah, of course. Right? When you initially look into it, right, it's not going to be cyber who comes running, you know, to figure out what happened. It's most likely going to be your property and casualty carriers who are going to come and check to see what happened, because there's been on-premises injury, there's been physical damage to property, and those are the two policies that respond first, all right? Now, when they go out there and they're going to investigate, and maybe a day, 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, who knows, later, they're going to figure out that this elevator collapse was caused by a hacking incident, or a network security failure is the official term, right, for insurance. So let's think about how you're going to go about filing this claim or getting what you really want to get from the carriers you want to get from, right? So in the case of if you have a cyber policy, most of the markets out there have an absolute bodily injury and property damage exclusion, alleging, arising, attributable to, all right? There is one market that doesn't. That's Star. We have four language in our bodily injury and property damage exclusion. And what does that mean? Well, if you had this incident and you had a Star cyber policy, we would respond with a forensic investigation, public relations services, because our policy is designed to provide those two things in the event that you have a potential security failure or privacy incident. We also provide business interruption for non-physical damage. So that means, you know, if you had to get a new server or rent a facility that had new computer servers and new equipment, we would pay for those things. However, we don't cover the actual bodily injury or property damage. Where you'd have to do is you'd have to go to your casualty carrier and tell them you had an on-premises injury and it was caused by an accident or occurrence, which was the elevator collapse. Right. This sounds like rudimentary and I'm making it very simplified, but in reality, those are the triggers that these policies respond to, and that's sort of the way you have to present it. You present to the casualty the on-premises injury, the wrongful death, because that's what it's designed to cover. And on the case of the cyber, you present the forensic investigation, the PR services, the non-physical business interruption, because that's what it's designed to cover. On the property side, there can be coverage. Nowadays, you'll see a lot of advertising that there's cyber coverage available in a property policy as well. That is true. There is cyber coverage available in property policies, but the verbiage they use there versus the verbiage you see in a full cyber policy is different, right? A property policy is an all-risk policy that has a small element of cyber, while a cyber policy is a very broad cyber policy. So the definition of what a cyber event constitutes or is really what differentiates the two. And what I mean by that is you can have semantics about whether the cyber attack was broad-based or if it was directed or a targeted attack. And typically in the property policies, they make it so it's a targeted attack versus a broad-based attack, which is available in the general cyber policy. So I don't mean to confuse anybody out there, but I hope this clarifies how it can intertwine in different policies. And you sort of need to look at the words and the exclusions of all these different policies before you go ahead and file your claim in the event that there's physical damage or bodily injury caused by a cyber attack.
Right. Okay. So are you seeing any interest in other carriers to also fill this void that STAR is filling?
Yes. So you're starting to see, and it starts from a strategy first, right, where a lot of the larger carriers in this space, including STAR, have started to move cyber out of the financial lines, management liability, professional liability, you know, umbrella or division, and they're making it its own independent group. And they're starting to incorporate and go out and find where they're giving the property coverage for cyber and to start to allocate premium from those books into the portfolio and then also in casualty and other lines, which a lot of the market is referring to as silent cyber. You know, this is a podcast, so you can't see me put quotes in the air. that's what they refer to it as. And silent cyber is starting to move, and it's no longer going to be silent because a lot of the markets are going to delineate for it and start to charge and allocate premium for it. Because in the event that does occur, markets that are comfortable with it should be able and will continue to write it, and others that aren't will develop an exclusion for it. And that doesn't mean exclusions aren't already out there. They are, just some of them are, again, I go back to the point of reading our words. It's very common to see on a casualty policy a CGL exclusion for cyber. All right, there is one that's absolute, and it excludes network security and privacy incidents. However, there are several that people call cyber exclusions. However, they only exclude the access or disclosure of personal or private information or confidential information, which in the beginning of the podcast we made clear are two separate things, right? And
right.
And if we have the hacking incident by itself and the casualty policy only has a privacy exclusion, well, did they really exclude the cyber?
Yeah.
Peter, that's the question that we have to ask on each individual risk that we look at, and we need to question ourselves as carriers, as brokers, as agents, as risk managers, does this particular risk have an exposure for physical damage? And if we're writing a manufacturer, it does. If we're writing a transportation company, it does. If we're writing a real estate property manager company, it does. If it has a construction company, it does, right? A healthcare company, it does, right? They could have EKG equipment. They can have all this stuff, right? So, but if we were writing a law firm, maybe they don't, right? If we're writing an insurance agent or broker's cyber insurance, maybe they don't, right? And that's why we need to question specific risk, which what I would say is the non-traditional risk, right? If you go ask a manufacturer to buy cyber insurance and it's covering privacy, do they really have a lot of private information? No, they don't. right? But they do have, if the system goes down and we can't produce our goods, issue, they have that. And God forbid they were producing food and beverage, and now the product is contaminated because of the hacking event. Now what? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, as an agent or broker, it's your responsibility to overall understand the risk of the account, regardless if it's cyber related or not. And when you start putting your cyber hat on, don't just think of private information. Please think of also the network security exposure. And even though the actual cyber policy might not have coverage for the bodily injury and property damage, it's still your responsibility as a broker agent to find some type of coverage. And that's what we're having this conversation about, is to help you do that.
There's another thing you had mentioned too, we chatted earlier, and that that is around the product liability implications. Going back to the elevator story again, Shiraz, has there been any case law, maybe not with an elevator per se, but in any of this where you say, well, it was a defect with the elevator. It was a hack or a network failure, but there's something wrong with the elevator, therefore product liability should respond. Is that, am I characterizing that correctly? It seems like another vague area.
It is, and I think you're bringing up one of two or three different arguments that you could bring up relating to the topic. So let's say that in the example we gave with the elevator, we didn't write the property manager. We wrote the elevator manufacturer. All right? And now that elevator that we sold and we installed and that we manage, okay, has a computer system in it. So in theory, we sold you some sort of technology product in addition to the elevator, right? Because now it's automated, it's computerized. Well, if the manufacturer was aware that there was a vulnerability in the system which allowed it to be hacked, is that really a manufacturer's defect? Is it a known flaw which now a product liability policy would exclude?
Mm.
Right? If it's unknown, that's a defect. And they didn't know about it, there's recourse. But if they knew about the vulnerability, which in most cases, most companies are aware of it, and it takes some time to review it and patch it or fix it, amend it, correct it. So if time frame, if there's an incident, well, that's an issue, right? And It's a legal philosophical question that myself or you, Peter, there is no right answer or wrong answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a question that needs to be debated and asked of individuals that you might be pursuing as an agent or a broker, and making sure you understand the overall risk. Because if you're acquiring a product's policy and you're acquiring the cyber insurance, I think you need to look into both of these things, especially if
mm-hmm.
they're a technology company, because the technology company have the natural overlap in this particular topic. But from a broader sense, Peter, it also brings up the topic of the Internet of Things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's a buzzword being thrown around, like, it's very popular. Okay, and the question becomes, you know, if your household items are hacked into, well, who's responsible for that? Is that a homeowner's issue? Because they don't fix appliances or repairs, right? You have to go buy a warranty policy or something like that, right? If you want to get repairs done, or if there's an issue with the fridge. But what if the fridge blows up and it burns the house down? Well, that fire is covered in the homeowner's. Right? So it becomes a bit interesting. It's the same thing not only with the fridge. If you looked at the home heating system, which
oh, yeah.
your alarm and security system, which is web-based and computerized, that can lead to damages in your home. Or the other most popular buzzword going around in the Internet of Things spaces, autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars. And how does that play out? Well, again, another philosophical question, because, for example, when in the news you saw Tesla had an incident in May of 2016, I think there was, you know, I might be wrong about the date, but where they had a test drove autonomous self-driving vehicle where an individual was in the car and the car crashed because the software didn't properly read the environment in front of it. I think it had to do with the color spectrum and how it saw a color on a truck and thought it was the sky, but in reality it was the truck. Now, the moral of the story or the premise of explaining this is it was a software error that caused the accident, not a hacking incident, all right? So now you put in that wrinkle that it was a hacking incident. But in either of these situations, there was a car accident. And usually, who covers a car accident? Not cyber, not casualty, but auto liability. Either personal or commercial. And I've never seen a cyber exclusion for network security failure or privacy on an auto policy. And I was having a discussion with someone else, and I put this analogy there. If you had a commercial auto policy and someone came to your garage and clipped the brakes on every one of your trucks in your fleet, and now the fleet pulls out and 15 different car accidents happen in within a half hour because the brake lines were cut, is that not covered in auto? Is there some sort of exclusion for malicious acts by others on the vehicle? As far as I know, no, it does not exclude that. The accident is the accident is the accident. If it was your fault or somebody else's fault, I think really it would be an intentional versus unintentional thing. But otherwise, they're the first line. Now, whether they want to subrogate and go and collect from someone else, that's when I think the question is going to come into play of whose coverage is going to have to respond to what, and the product's liability that arises from there will also be impacted along with casualty and property and cyber and other things.
Yeah. It's pretty astonishing when you think of all the things that we take for granted that are impacted by this. Just look at, we haven't really talked about food and beverage, you know, for example, but, you know, the whole way that's all interconnected. There's just so much in society that but the industry has a way. I mean, sometimes it's ugly and lawyers make a lot of money for a number of years, but then suddenly, not suddenly, but over time, there's solutions that emerge. How do you see this all playing out, Shiraz? I know you do a lot of reading. I know you do a lot of commenting on this topic. How do you see it? Look further into 2018, next year, 2019, and so on. Is the industry? Are you seeing like perhaps a new way to cover this? New ways, new companies, maybe new innovations around policies or packaging policies? Because right now it's just a real mess, based on what you're saying.
Well, Peter, the way I see it is, I've been in the insurance industry for about 10 years now, and what I learned is every insurance that's out there emerged from a hole in another insurance. And right now, we have some moving parts to your cyber risk, and I think what needs to come out is some sort of glue that brings them all together. And how we see that glue or what that catalyst is, I don't know yet. And one of the reasons why is, again, we joked about it in the beginning of our conversation, is do you control all the different coverages on this account. And if you don't, well, it's kind of hard to get everybody to cooperate with each other and to share information. But I don't think that there's one master policy that's going to solve all this, and there's one master underwriter that has to know every line of coverage and also cyber and be an expert in all these spaces and be able to ask all the right questions. So what I think is there's going to be a cyber risk industry practice, most likely would probably be the right way to describe it, where there has to be some sort of expertise internally on the carrier side between the different operating groups, property, casualty, or whatever. And how they deploy the coverage could be, like I said, an umbrella policy that gives you like a one-pager that gives you coverage through all the different lines if you're right with one carrier, or an excess differences in conditions policy that lists all your different policies and delineates who's assigning what where and attachment points and that kind of stuff. Or I'm sure some markets will come out with a package policy that includes the GL, auto, comp, property, cyber, and the whole gambit. I think all of those are possible. And I think it's going to really be dependent on how the customer wants it delivered to them rather than anything. And that's really going to stem on the distribution that comes through the brokers and agents. So we put the question out there and we pose the problem. They got to help us get feedback from the marketplace to develop a better solution. But as of right now, if you wanted to solve the problem today, Peter, excess DIC is probably the best avenue, which is basically buying a policy that says in the event that, you know, property and casualty don't respond to the wrongful death, on-premises injury, or the physical property damage, that a carrier is going to step up and pay up to whatever limit they feel comfortable. So at Star, this excess DIC is available. Other markets like, you know, for example, AIG offer it as well. And as of right now, that excess DIC is probably your best route. There are some other markets that will give you an express grant of coverage, a carve back the bodily injury and property damage exclusion like they would in an E&O policy almost. But again, each person's client is different, and you got to sort of look at the words and make sure it works and you understand how, who's going to pay what and where. But more news to come on that if we get something that's more streamlined and more of a packaged approach.
Okay. Well, Shiraz, with that, I want to thank you very much for the summary. I think it's obviously you made the point for agents and brokers to pay attention to this, especially in those risks that you define on the commercial side that are you know, understanding the whole body of risk that the client might face and how to address it. I appreciate it very much, your time, and we'll stay in touch with you. Cyber is a big topic I know our listeners care about, so I'll stay in touch with you, Shiraz.
All right. Thank you, Peter.